The following podcast may contain inappropriate language, sexual content, and spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Gonzo.moe No Name Anime Show. I'm JP. I'm joined by Noelle and Kyle. How are you two doing?
Anime.
Yes.
Yes. I have to correct you there because I'm actually not Noelle. I'm Anime Tucker Carlson. I'm here to talk about the insane left and how they are censoring our anime. They're making it less sexy in order to accommodate them, and that's a Have you seen what they've done to the green M&M? The green M&M anime, it was going to be AOTY of 2022. And now look at what happened. So
I'm such a broken person that I thought you were doing a Daryl Surratt impression at first.
Oh, no.
I am sorry, Daryl Surratt. I love you. I listen to Anime World Order too much. Where can people find this podcast? They can find it at gonzo.moe. I almost never say that. It's on Apple Podcasts. I think it's on the Google Store, whatever they call that now. It's on Spotify, which is technically evil now, but I think you can listen to podcasts on there for free. They're not giving us money anyway. where else? WJMOERadio.com is also where you can find the show. And my slowly waning anime morning show. There was a lot of people listening to it at first. Now I have 5 loyal fans, which is fine. I'm still going to keep doing the show because it's a lot of fun for me. So we have a lot of shit talk to do this week, but I thought before we get into shit, we'd do something positive. What you guys been watching?
Well, I've started to dip my toe into this season's new anime. I got caught up in Tribe Nine.
Okay.
Which I've heard you guys mention on the newsroom and such like that. I love it. It's fantastic. It's everything I want out of anime. Cause I mentioned when we spoke about Sabaku Ibisco that had an energy about it that I feel has been missing from anime lately, and Tribe Nine is the same way.
What was funny about me talking about Tribe Nine on the newsroom is I was telling Vinny and Kyle that this is a boring show and they shouldn't watch it, and I kept describing it in a way that they're like, we need to watch this show.
Right, yeah, because I mean, I don't
feel Gundam like of baseball. What's not to like?
I'm slow to pick it back up. I think they're doing a simuldub, so maybe I'll try it again with the simuldub.
Okay.
I only watched the first 2 episodes, and it wasn't doing it for me. But every review I see says it's awesome. So,
I mean, episode 3 was when they pulled me over because a guy dies in a game of extreme basketball.
Baseball?
Baseball, yes.
Is it one of the main people?
Yes, it's one of those main people that is part of the team, and he dies in the most anime way because he gets super injured during the baseball match, and then after the baseball match, they're just hanging out at home, and he's just like, "Hey guys, I'm gonna step out and get some air. I'll talk to you later."
Oh no!
And then he just like sits down on a street corner, and then like
Ashita no Joe's.
Ashita no
Joe's. Oh no! To death.
That's funny. I thought when you said the most anime way, I thought you were gonna say he tripped and fell into a pair of anime titties and got punched to the moon and then suffocated.
Going to make the same joke
because there's no air in space.
I mean, that works too. I mean, I will say this. I thought that was extremely funny in, I think, the first episode of Tribe Nine when the guy falls and he doesn't necessarily land in anyone's panties, but he lands between her thighs. And I was like, wow, I don't think I've seen that before.
The my favorite part about that show was the, what were they, quadruplets or triplets? I thought they were really funny.
Right.
Also, the fact that the main guy, he kept calling the other like two supporting characters by the wrong name.
Right.
I don't remember what those names were anymore, but I really liked those two elements. But
what's especially weird about his relationship with those two characters is it seems like what they're building is that, you know, he's like the older veteran baseball player, like imparting his wisdom on these two younger guys, but they all look the same age because of the way like the Danganronpa guy draws his characters.
Yeah. Kyle, have you been watching anything?
Yeah, I watched this really, I don't know if you guys know, but Yoshitaka Amano did a, like, the only way to describe it is like kind of sort of a Fantasia piece with this guy named Mike Smith.
Okay.
And it was this, it's like a 24-minute long animated piece all done in Yoshitaka Amano's art style, which, as you know, is very ornate and is usually never like actually done in a motion kind of way. Right? Like, he did, like, he's the guy who animated the covers of Vampire Hunter D, but all of the animated Vampire Hunter D's, like, they are not able to emulate his art style and make it move, because that would be too expensive. But anyways, they did this short, and it's 1001 Nights, and it is wild. Everyone should check it out.
Is this the one that Discotech put out, or is this something unrelated to that?
This is unrelated. That's the, you're thinking of the, that was the Tezuka production. Mushi production. This is just something that was done for something called the Philharmonic Project. And okay. I think it was the only one that was actually finished, but it's really cool. Very like, I don't know. It's really unlike anything you've kind of seen in animation. Really cool. And, I don't think you can find it though on like YouTube. Nice. So maybe, you know, find it somewhere where you find all the other things you find. I'm being very vague here.
I don't think anybody's going to fault you for saying download the obscure anime that is probably hard to find even in Japan.
Yeah, just go to like, you know, whatever.
I have been I've been watching Yashahime. I do weekly Yashahime updates on the Super Happy America Morning, much to the chagrin of the five people that listen. And so they're racing towards the finish line right now, I think, because things have gotten so crazy. You would think that in a show that already involves time travel, that it wouldn't seem that crazy that it's starting to involve time travel again, but because it's Yashahime, because they don't, you know, in Inuyasha, they went back and forth like it was just whatever. You know, it was almost like they were just going through a doorway. Like, time travel wasn't treated like time travel actually is treated in, like, say, a Steins Gate. You know, like, there was no worry about, like, Kagome, like, stepping on a butterfly and causing World War III.
Right.
But time travel has played such an important role in these last few episodes. Noel, are you watching Yashahime? I'm sure Kyle isn't.
I am not. Yeah.
Did you watch
your
any
tweets
of it?
Make it seem like a cautionary tale. Like, you tweeted this morning. Right. Like, it was basically like, do not watch this show is the only thing that I got from it. And I don't know why you're continuing.
It's because it's so odd. So the first
like,
season.
Noel, did you watch this show that I keep telling people to not watch?
So the first season, I've talked about this before, but the first season ended with Inuyasha's daughter and Sesshomaru's twin daughters fighting like the embodiment of evil in space as astral projections of animals. Cool. That is not an exaggeration. And midway through season one of
You say astral projections of animals, do you mean like dogs because they're all dog demons?
Well, like one of them I think was a wolf and the other one was like a butterfly. I guess butterflies aren't technically animals if you're a scientist. I learned my lesson on the newsroom not to question science when I asked Vinny if he was a tomatoologist, and he was. So I'm not here to tell you what animals aren't and are. But there was also an episode in the middle of Yashahime season one that was like a throwaway filler episode, which like the whole show is filler. But this one really felt fillery because it was just Sesshomaru and Inuyasha fighting space. There's an evil comet that's coming to destroy the Earth, and Inuyasha did like the Baki Yura and sent it back into space. And it's one of the crazier things that happens in season one, and then you just forget about it. It turns out that's a really key element to what the show's been building up to, is the comet's coming back for revenge.
Imagine if that had been how Don't Look Up ended. Inuyasha and Sesshomaru show up.
They look up. I don't know anything about that. That's the Leo DiCaprio TV show about like global warming. Oh, it's a movie.
It's like it's about a comet coming to Earth and they treat it like global warming. Where they're just like, nah, it'll be fine.
Well, so the comet's coming back for revenge. And so the main antagonist has he sent his arm into the future, which turns into a clone of him. And spoilers, it's Toa's Sesshomaru's daughter who lives in Kagome's time. She goes to high school. The arm turns out to be her homeroom teacher.
So cool.
This is like 45 episodes in the making. Nice. It's so much payoff. Like, it's all been worth it for this moment.
I saw the first episode, and I feel like I remember seeing her homeroom teacher.
Yeah, it really takes a while to get going. So he's been, I don't know, Twittering his past self. Somehow he's able to talk to himself 500 years ago and let him know that the comet is coming back. And so the guy that wants to destroy the world changes his tune, and he's like, actually, I want to save the world. Because if I can beat this comet, everyone's going to think I'm the baddest motherfucker on the planet, and then they're just going to worship me. And that is what Yashahime has turned into. And so today's episode, spoilers, let me find the tweet that I did. Nobody liked it.
No, I have it right here. You said, if you told me that this is where Yashahime was heading back when it premiered, I wouldn't have believed you.
Can you read the text in those pictures, Kyle?
It says, my right arm, Osamu Kirin, lead me to the Reiwa area era. And I'm sure that you meant this as a good thing, but I read that and I went, oh, do not watch this. This is a danger sign is what this is. Oh my God.
For those unaware, the Reiwa era is the era we currently live in.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I didn't know if that was a made up Inuyasha term, but in the context, I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
But that's like, what they actually call the modern era in Japan?
Yeah, because the Heisei era just ended, I think, the year before last. So now we're in the Reiwa era.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I do remember that.
It's whenever the old emperor dies, right? We're going to enter a new era.
Mm. That sounds about right. You really think that with how much Japanese pop culture has played a role in my life that I would know more about current events in Japan? I am the worst person.
That's same way with Queens just in like England, right? Every anime fan. You think the average anime fan knows anything about Japanese pop culture?
That's fair.
That doesn't involve cartoons.
But no, it's the same way with Europe, you know, when they rule, or Britain, right? UK, because it's like Victorian England, and then there's like we're in Elizabeth. I guess we're technically Elizabethan the second period, but I don't know if that's like an outmoded thing, and they're just not going to do that going forward.
You know, my favorite conspiracy theory right now is that
that she's dead,
that the queen is dead, but they're just lying about it until she turns 70 so they don't have to tell everybody that she was 69 when she died.
Nice.
Or something. It was something like that.
She's older than that.
Maybe it's 69, 70 years of being the queen then. I'm not sure what the specifics were.
She was a queen for 69 years.
All I'm saying is if she did, that would be real nice of her.
Yeah, way to go.
Oh my God. Yashahime is awesome. Everybody should watch it. What's really funny is the Funimation player, it can't agree with how to list the episodes. So sometimes it will say, like, this one is episode 17, and it'll be like episode 17 of season 2. But then the next episode will say, like, episode 47.
Wow.
Yeah. And so you just have to, the way that I work my work through that is I just always manually select the next episode instead of selecting the, it like auto says like, do you want to watch episode blah, blah, blah? I don't trust that thing. Anyway, as much as I'd like to talk about Yashahime all day, we have some very important shit to talk. So the first one I have in our agenda, I'm not going to say who this is because this guy's obnoxious and I don't want anybody to go find him. But somebody on Twitter was talking about how they think that Justin Tsivakis was like conspiring against MDGeist in writing bad reviews about it back in, you know, what, the early 2000s or 99 or whenever Anime News Network was founded. And he was doing this because he was mad that he had to work on it and that MDGeist is actually good. And people like us just say it's bad because we have this narrative that we're trying to spread. I had people accusing me of just like continuing the narrative. And it's like, what? What does that mean? Like, how is my life impacted in either way if anybody likes or hates MDGeist?
Are these like the same people who are going around giving a, speaking of Daryl Surratt shit over stuff he had said about Tomino?
Yes.
For the past like 10 years? Really? Okay.
It's the same crowd. And I think the one of the biggest problems with the discourse around this is that it fails to put anything into context. So somebody said MDGeist is better than any seasonal show right now, and like that could be true. I think MDGeist is really funny, and I enjoy watching MDGeist more than I enjoy watching World's End Harem.
Oh, that's definitely true.
Or Geki Doll. But you have to put yourself in the context of when that came out. That it's like you maybe got what like 10 anime a year, and one of them was MDGeist. Like I'd be pretty upset about that too.
I think where the disconnect is coming with that is I feel like a lot of modern anime fans, a lot of really just modern people who consume media in general, they don't look at the concept of, hey, I watch this because it's so bad, or like I enjoy this despite it being terrible, or like it's goofy enough that I can enjoy this. They just see things as, this is good or this is bad. There's no like, there's no, hey, I watched the friggin' Devilman OVA and I laughed when he ripped that demon girl's boobs off.
Oh my God.
And ate them. Yeah. Like there's nothing like that.
Well, there's also the, because a lot of the examples that they were bringing up was like, oh, well, you know, this scene is framed in a really interesting way, or this animation is done in a really cool way. And it's like something can look good and still be bad. Look at fucking Demon Slayer.
That's also a thing. Like, hell, if we go back to when friggin' Shield Hero first came out, and I said that was an incredibly shitty show because it was paced horribly and I didn't like the characters and the story kind of sucked, but everyone was just like, oh, but look at the animation of this scene. And it's like, I don't care how much money they put into the show, it still kind of sucks.
You don't understand, Noel, the Sakuga.
Yeah.
Kyle, have you seen MDGeist?
No, I'm familiar with it, but I've never taken the dive.
It's certainly worth it. It's only like 45 minutes long. And
then it's because I'm in on the take, you know, I'm in on this. Like you guys are discounting this. This is a real thing. You know, I'm being paid a lot to not watch it and to say it's bad by other people.
Yeah, that, God, I wish I was being paid to have bad takes. Let me see if I can remember what MDGeist is about. I watched this like 12 years ago.
Wasn't it just about like a mercenary guy named Geist? And yes. he's the very most dangerous guy. Yes. Yeah,
he was like being held prisoner on like the moon or something, and he escaped. I remember the opening. He didn't have a very, like, one of the things people pointed out is that he didn't have a whole lot of facial hair for having been in prison for 100 years, without a razor blade or something, and that he like put a fake bullet hole on his head, and that's how he escaped, was because everybody thought he was dead.
Metal. So if he didn't have a razor to shave, why would they think he had a bullet to shoot himself?
I don't know. I need to rewatch this. So super fans of MD Geist, please don't come after me for getting all these details wrong. But then he like, there's something called a death force at Brain Palace that they need to overthrow. And so the whole movie is like him fighting to
get to Brain Palace. I thought the death force was in MD Geist 2.
The death force is in both. Because at the end, I remember the end of MD Geist. So he finally makes it to like the central controls at Brain Palace that controls the death force. And, he, you know, the whole thing was like, we have to destroy this so the death force can't, you know, be the death force. And he's just like, actually, you know, I'm kind of pro death force. And he pushes the release the death force button and it goes to credits.
He likes the jobs that the death force will bring.
Oh my God. Is the death force just like the far right?
You know, the death force, no, it's like global warming. The death force is a job creator, you know, lots of money in the death force.
So MD Geist 2 is about the aftermath of that. And it turns out the death force were just like really angry robo caterpillars. At least that's how I remember it. And he hangs out with Most Dangerous Krauser, who is also very dangerous. I think they're the same level of dangerous, though. But his skin was blue. And then at the end, they atomize all the color in the show, and it becomes black and white.
You know, this sounds like the most, like, or rather like most 80s OVAs, right? Which is just like bunches of cool stuff happening.
Yeah.
Not really worried about why or... Just draw the cool things.
I think Ichiro Itano directed it when he was 23.
Nice. Way to go, Ichiro.
But it sold so well for CPM that John O'Donnell like produced an MD Geist 2. And
right. And isn't MD Geist like their logo or something?
Yes, it was. When they were around, MD Geist was the logo for CPM. I really need to rewatch MD Geist, but I wanted to read one of the tweets that was posted about this. This is a screen cap from 4chan, so it's obviously a great source of information. Ohada stuff in general got unfairly criticized by Justin Savakis, even something like Cybernetics Guardian. I honestly think he just had it out for the guy after all the shit he had to deal with at CPM. I think I might have Cybernetics Guardian. I never watched it, though. And then they go on to say, honestly, he didn't really deal with anything. His boss, John O'Donnell, was a big MD Geist fan, made the character their mascot, funded the director's cut version and the sequel, and produced a really comprehensive DVD. So Vegas just hated MD Geist and thought everything about it was irredeemable trash. He was working during an interesting time in which a lot of anime was being imported for the first time, but he was always one of those types to behave like an insufferable snob who thought anime had to adhere to a specific high quality. He never went through any shit other than working on something he didn't like, which is what most jobs are. I love this, like, all he had to do, or like, I'm trying to think of the best way to parse this. Like, how dare you want things to be good?
Right. I hate this attitude that, like, you should just be happy that you have a job, regardless of how shitty it is.
It's also, like, an even worse stay in your lane, right? They're like, oh, he produces anime. He shouldn't have opinions on it, though, where it's like, usually it's like, oh, this voice actor wants political thing. And they're like, just worry about voice acting. But this is like actually his job. And they're like, you should just be grateful you even have an employment. Blah.
Well,
honestly, if I'm being honest, this sounds like somebody who like most of the anime they've watched is, oh no, I was reincarnated into an MMO and now all the pretty elf ladies love me. And he watched like an 80s OVA for the first time.
And it just blew their mind.
It just blew his mind. And then he looked more into it and he saw like old reviews where people call it bad and he can't like parse that.
Yeah.
Well, that's really what it feels like.
It is this interesting like, a lot of the stuff that was made from that era isn't great, but that doesn't mean that it's not awesome.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, and I can't grasp that, the idea that something could be, like, bad, but also enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. I thought that the one of the points I wanted to bring up was in this screen cap, and I was wrong, so I'm just going to have to do it from memory. So I'm paraphrasing this. Somebody was claiming that the reason that Discotech never got MD Geist is because Justin wouldn't allow it. And I'm pretty sure that Sentai Filmworks has MD Geist. But they also were saying that Justin is the reason why they didn't get Madball on Blu-ray, which is not true because this was brought up very recently. The rights holders of Madball 34 are not interested in licensing it again currently.
Exactly. Yeah. Like,
what?
I know
you're saying
that
this conspiracy theory wasn't well sourced. What?
Yeah. Like I know that because I'm like the number two or three biggest Madball 34 fan in America.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. It's a weird attitude.
I'd love to have that shit on Blu-ray, but hey, yeah, it's just not in the cards right now.
It's such a strange, it almost seems like an anti-ANN, anti-Justin thing more than a, I think these people have bad opinions thing, because they nitpick in such a specific way, because the same person is like, Justin Savakis is an asshole. Look at this review he wrote in 2002.
Mm.
Like, okay, maybe he didn't like that show back then, but people can change over what? 20 years that's been now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, I think when he was working at CPM, he was just like a video editor. He edited their trailers. I don't know how much creative control he had on these shows. So to say that he was like pulling the strings behind the scene to try to curate the American anime taste, it's a little crazy. But also, you have to, again, put things into context. Like back then, I wasn't around quite yet, but people were fighting to change the perception of anime because everybody was saying, like, this is just, you know, super violent trash and porn, or it's Pokemon.
And I mean, yeah, and I mean, that was in part due to people
like Justin Savakis putting out MD Geist.
No. That was due to people the previous, like, couple of years promoting anime as like, this isn't your mom and dad's cartoons.
Not kids.
You'll never see me. Yeah, exactly. Not kids stuff.
I saw.
You'll never see Mickey Mouse like throw a bunch of grenades that are tied to his pubes. You'll never see
Mickey Mouse fall into Minnie's cleavage.
Yeah.
There, you know, if there's any indication of the change in times, somebody posted on archive.org recently an issue of Protoculture Addicts, which I think was a Canadian anime magazine. At one point, Anime News Network bought them, but they're no longer in circulation. But there was an issue that was just screen caps of every time an anime girl's tits were out. And it was called like the Super Fan Service Edition, and it was just full of shower scenes.
Oh my gosh.
Jesus.
So, you know, we've come a long way.
Yeah.
But maybe not as far as I'd like us to have come. I want to talk about Totally Not Mark a little bit. So Totally Not Mark was a YouTuber, well, still is, who a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, we talked about this on, I think it would have been the Newsbroom.
Yeah, we mentioned it just for a second.
So he got a bunch of takedowns for his videos. And this has been happening a lot with anime YouTube, because anime YouTube is very clip heavy, and
right,
I don't want to give it to the man because copyright law is really fucked up, but you are playing with fire when you release a 30 minute video that's just like nothing but anime clips and you're talking over it. Like, there's fair use exists, but I don't know if you can argue it in that context.
I get that. I just think it is weird when it's like, because I've seen Totally Not Mark videos, and it seems like most of the time, like the whole time, it's really him like analyzing things from these shows. And I feel like you can't really do that in a YouTube video unless you have clips from the show.
Yeah. I'm more talking about YouTube as a whole, not specifically Mark, when I say that.
Yeah, and I think the case of that is really just down to, because like with YouTube and copyright strikes like this, all of that is managed by like algorithms and stuff, right? There's no one sitting there curating videos and going, oh snap, this, like, I just think they need like a human eye behind that as well, not just like an AI bot to say like, oh man, this is violating copyright, you know?
Yeah. I guess what I would see a lot was people that were reading an essay while playing otherwise unrelated clips of anime during the entire essay, or the people that are just talking while posting like Counter-Strike footage. That's what I see a lot of. Mark specifically, I'm not familiar.
Well, yeah, I certainly could see how that could be an issue.
But so he ended up sort of coming out of this copyright strike thing with a little bit of success, where they just blocked his videos in Japan. And I guess he did a video where he talked about this, and there's a quote from that video that was going around that is a lot. And it is, I genuinely believe, had it not been for Team 4 Star and the Dragon Ball Z Abridged series, that Dragon Ball specifically wouldn't have remained nearly as popular in the Western world during a time where not much content surrounding the property was being released. And it reminded me a lot of the, was it Vulture or Variety? There was some article that came out around Anime NYC where somebody said Cowboy Bebop owes its continued popularity to this Reddit group.
Oh boy.
And like Jason DeMarco from Toonami was like, well, I guess fuck me. And so I wanted to talk about this and like how this, I don't know how this attitude happened. Like certainly Dragon Ball Z Abridged played a role in the popularity, but I feel like the fact that Funimation has kept Dragon Ball Z constantly in print since they were founded as a company probably also plays a role in the popularity.
Right. And it may also, because here's the thing, I feel like definitely there was a period where there was no Dragon Ball TV on television, but at that same time there was like a new Dragon Ball game every couple of years for people to like buy and play and be like, oh yeah, I remember Frieza. So,
well, yeah. I mean, if you lived in Japan, certainly there was a time where there was no Dragon Ball content for a while.
Right.
You know, after GT, like
here in the States,
it's been constant.
We never had a moment where there wasn't like something, because there were the Budokai games and then there were the Raging Blast games. Like we had a steady influx of like supplementary Dragon Ball stuff.
Well, and even if it wasn't Dragon Ball Kai or Dragon Ball Super, like there were still the orange bricks were being put at, like you could buy those at Walmart.
Right.
And then the Dragon Box and then the uncut version and then the dozens of Blu-ray attempts that they tried to do. And then Kai happened. And, you know, we still get Dragon Ball movies every couple of years.
Yeah. And I mean, here's the thing. I feel like Dragon Ball in and of itself reached a point of cultural penetration where you didn't need to have, like, a constant influx of media from that property in order for it to stay relevant. Mm-hmm. There are people who still remembered Power Rangers even though they had never watched it past Mighty Morphin, and they didn't even realize that it had kept going for so many years up until like as early as this year. Hell, there's like Goku has a parade float in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. That is a thing that you're not going to see for many other media properties.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
it's also just, there was somebody in not Mark, or maybe it was Mike Toole, that was talking about this specific comment that was saying, like, that Dragon Ball Abridged kept Dragon Ball relevant during a 14-year drought of Dragon Ball content. I kind of resent that outlook.
Which I'm like, there wasn't a 14-year drought of Dragon Ball content.
Well, there is that, but also just the idea that there needs to be a constant stream of this thing that I like, or it doesn't matter anymore.
I mean, that's what we've been conditioned to believe now.
Now that we live in
like the post MCU, post like Assassin's Creed era, where it's like, yeah, no, there has to be something every year, regardless of how good it is, it needs to come out so that people are talking about it.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've said this more than once, and even though I am sort of half watching it, like, Dragon Ball Super did not need to happen. And
I mean, definitely, yeah.
I know that people like it, but it's weird to me that people felt that they needed another, what, it's like 200 episodes of Dragon Ball. Like, let it exist.
Especially that it's basically a concept that kind of rewrites Dragon Ball canon, which that in and of itself is a weird thing to think about.
I was thinking about that as I've been watching it. Because I remember, like, the whole concept of, like, Trunks from the future and this, like, crazy future world that's coming up. And it's like, now we're kind of in the future and things have gone so far off that, like, I guess it could be because they fucked around and beat Cell, so that future wasn't going to happen. You could make that argument, but...
Oh, not even just that. Just the whole concept that Dragon Ball Z, the way Dragon Ball Z ends... kind of conflicts with how Super works, because Super is supposed to take place in like the handful of years between Goku beating Boo and then Goku fighting Ub at the end of Z.
Is Ub around in Super?
No, but Ub has in Super, like, Ub has been mentioned.
Oh, wait, I may have just misunderstood you. Are you're saying that Super takes place between the penultimate and final episode of Z?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, because Super begins, like, immediately after they beat Boo.
Okay.
And that's when they meet Beerus, and Goku has, like, his whole fight with Beerus. Like, that all is supposed to take place after they beat Boo,
mm-hmm.
but before that, like, final three episodes of Z, where they go to the World Martial Arts Tournament, Goku meets Ub, and they have their fight.
I did not, like, realize that. That is
all
crazy.
Of Super takes place before that.
Jesus.
They call him Ub in the English dub?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be Ube, right? They're all named after Japanese foods.
Really? I thought, nah, because it's supposed to be Boo backwards. So
is
instead
that
of B-U, yeah, instead of B-U-U.
So it's two U's and then a B. Okay,
yeah,
I
it's two
so.
U's and then a B.
Does this also assume that Dragon Ball GT never happened?
See, that's another weird thing, because it's like GT introduces the concept of, like, Super Saiyan 4 and all of that, but why would that need to be a thing when we have, like, Super Saiyan, God Super Saiyan, like, Ultra Instinct and all of that?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, that's the weird thing about Super, is it really, like, rewrites the whole canon of Dragon Ball.
If you're, like,
a real Dragon Ball head and you care about those kinds of things, you're sitting down, like, making yarn, like, felt boards with pictures and shit, and you're like Charlie Day in Always Sunny about Dragon Ball. You're like, let me talk about Saiyans. Can I talk about the Saiyans for a minute?
I love that the most recent episode I watched, Emperor Pilaf finally gets the Dragon Balls, and they just, like, asked for ice cream and money, and I was, like, ready to throw my remote at the TV. What? Dragon Ball Super. It's a mess.
I just want to say one thing. I mean, you're talking about this YouTuber. I mean, I think it's as much as, like, one, you know, like, people who make quote unquote content, right? There's a lot of like prestige in there, or they're trying to be, right? Like they don't want to just, they're kind of like, oh, look, like I'm a YouTuber, I'm doing important stuff. So I think that YouTube is a big, like, I think it's as much that as anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of just like, oh, we're doing important work here. And like, that's why you should help us fight these legal things. And, you know, like, I'm sure some of them are.
Yeah, I try to stay away from anime YouTube as much as I can. I do think that there probably is important work happening there, but so much of it feels like clickbait to me that I just...
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Just like unresearched clickbait, and I say this as somebody that doesn't know anything about what he's talking about.
And I don't think I've seen a few good visual essays, but like they're not the kind of stuff that I think most YouTubers are making, which is very much just like, hello, what's up, you know, like audience, I'm here to talk over this episode. And they're kind of like, yeah, wow, seriously. I really like the dramatics. This is really, you know what I mean? Like it's a very low bar. It's actually very depressing.
A lot of reaction content.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, basically. The only anime YouTubers I follow regularly are like hood dudes who talk about fights in anime.
That's cool.
Like it's just fun to watch. It's just fun to listen to a guy be like, yo man, Tanjiro wanted that smoke or something like that.
I was watching a guy, I think his name was Blade. He would talk about how like the workout regimens in Baki, how that would actually affect your body.
Oh yeah, I've heard about him before. Yeah, because I think he's like a personal
trainer or something.
Yeah, so he always talks about like, hey, what if you actually tried to work out like Zoro, or how do those kids in Tokyo Revengers stay so fit?
So this kind of segues into the next piece.
Oh yeah. One thing I also wanted to bring up. So I've seen like pictures of Totally Not Mark mm-hmm. for the first couple of times. I feel like it always looks like he just got finished crying.
He probably did. I mean, the poor guy had his channel demolished.
Like, yeah, there was that one, but then I feel like other videos we've seen since, they all look like he just got done like weeping about, and like, yeah,
maybe. So there's a Suede Blade is another one that was dealing with some serious takedown issues. They got a cease and a desist / like give us $800 thing from the company that makes the Pokemon anime.
Wow.
And I'm a little less sympathetic of this person because I looked at their videos and it is,
I feel like that's a weird amount.
Yeah, it's a bizarrely small amount too. Yeah.
Slap suit. That's what it's like really.
But Kyle mentioned like there's these people that just talk over an episode, and from what I could tell, all of the videos are gone now. But I skimmed through one of his videos and it was just 30 minutes of him talking while the Pokemon episode was playing. It's like, well, that's probably why you got a takedown, my guy.
Yeah, what you're supposed to do, like, you're supposed to release those, like, you release those as podcast commentaries. Like, that's what you're supposed to do, basically.
Yeah, seriously.
When you do that.
Yeah, you just play it while you watch the video?
Yeah, but, like, yeah, that's the legal way in which you would actually do that, is you would watch the
anime
episode.
Pulse, they used to do that.
Yeah, right. And you would just release it as a podcast and you would say push play at the same time and it'll be synced.
Me and Ryan did a couple of those and I've been meaning to do it again, but I haven't found the right show. But we watched this miserable show called I Don't Like You at All, Big Brother, which is just like a early or mid 2000s incest show.
Yes. Oh yeah.
You know what's really disheartening? I found out that the sister in that show shares my birthday.
it was like the hey, Aura Emo worked out, so let's go with this.
Yeah, well yeah, shittier Aura Emo. Well I don't remember a lot about that show, but I remember that the opening credits had this really obnoxious like zoom in on the panty shot, because the sister, I think she was like swooping through like Spider-Man or something, and the camera zooms in on her panties as she's swooping in. She's wearing a skirt, if you must know. And I also remember the guy, the brother, was like part of a jerk off club. Not to say like they're a bunch of jerk offs, but they had a club devoted to jacking off.
Oh.
But me and Ryan, we did that for just that show. It was called the Fight Bait Anime Club. And then we never did it again. So maybe it's time to do more of those. I don't know.
The Gonzo.moe Anime Club.
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking about having an anime club for a while. Because I mean, in person would be hard because it's just a pain in the ass to get around here. But I have like a decent setup now, and I want to share that with people and watch terrible anime and good anime. But instead, I just sit around and do it alone. Like a loser. But anyway, this person's, all of their videos have been taken down now. They think that the world is ending, and they think that all of anime YouTube is going to be demolished in a matter of days. I don't know if that's going to happen.
I mean, I think that you can both say that, like, okay, maybe this isn't the greatest what this guy was doing, but then also say that, like, oh, this is a shitty workaround. Because if it does tie into the first story, right? Because originally what happened with what was his name? The guy with...
Totally Not Mark?
Yeah, Totally Not Mark. So he had, like, the reason why his ended up being so, like, having a good conclusion is because... Basically, I think, what is it? Like, they tried to take it down one way, and then YouTube, they did it like so much that YouTube was like, hey, like, let's ask further questions because, like, these are our rules. And then they tried to go around that and got the videos taken down anyways. And, like, YouTube didn't like them, like, basically ignoring their own rules. And then they took a closer look at it, and this led to this. Whereas this is a strategy where these companies are finding, like, a workaround that is, like, kind of like a foolproof method, because they can just, you know, like, start these lawsuits in Japan, and then it's so hard for anybody to fight that, because, like, it's already expensive enough hiring a lawyer in your own country without having to, like, the expertise necessary to, you know, like, find, like, someone who knows about copyright in Japanese and can maybe speak English. So, like, this is a worrying thing that they have found a method that is just like, fuck, and it's super, like, relatively cheap for them, and it more or less guarantees, like, that is worrying.
I have mixed feelings about this, because I've been thinking about this, and I've written about it a little bit, is how prevalent this type of entertainment has become. And that it's only a matter of time before the bubble bursts, the bubblegum crisis. You know, if you look at TikTok, if you look at YouTube, if you look at OnlyFans, if you look at Instagram, so much of user-created content is based on established properties. And without getting into a conversation about how fucked up copyright can be, it is like, you know, if you create a character, for example, and then somebody else... like starts an entire online brand based on like just dressing up as that character and starts making, you know, a ton of money, like you're going to feel a little salty about that.
Definitely.
And it's, you know, I think that these are extreme examples, but it's only a matter of time before this finally starts to be examined more, because, you know, you think about how many like restaurants just have like a Super Mario mural on them that just drew it because they felt like it and they get away with it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's what's so weird about this, because this is like the problem, which is that Japan's copyright laws are so different. So, for example, in Japan, it's legal for people to sell doujinshi, even if it uses existing characters, because they're drawing it. So, but in Japan, like, you're not allowed to use something that wasn't drawn by you. So, like, even the ways in which our fair use laws exist are incredibly at odds, which is why the proposed solution is that they just want it to be geo-blocked in Japan, because Japan's fair use laws are basically different than every other country's.
Well, what they could do is just the same thing that they do with like licensing. Like, if you have a channel that's devoted 100% to talking about Dragon Ball Z, then just a percentage of that profit just goes to Toei or whoever makes Dragon Ball Z. Like, that would be the...
Right, but Toei doesn't want that. Because remember, like, we're also coming from Japan, which is, like, the most, like...
They just want to like, have even complete control media over operates. Their property.
Right, yeah.
Right, like, you know, you don't get to just write anything you want, right? Like, the famous magazines, like, what's the big gaming magazine that has, like,
multiple... Famitsu.
Yeah, Famitsu, right? Like, you have... That's, like, you have to pay, right? There's, like... The companies pay for a lot of that stuff, which is why, like, sometimes they'll get a good review and people will just be like, oh, like, wonder, you know, like I know yep. that they are rating the game, but, like, it's a lot less, like, oh, we're the media and we're kind of beyond, like, it's much more hand in hand. So
I just want to make sure I understand that, right? Are you saying that the writers or the company that makes the magazine has to pay the video game company to be able to review the property?
No, I think it's the other way around.
The other way around. People. Oh, so it's payola.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it. Right.
Literally in Japan, you know, it's like the whole thing with anime conventions, right? When you interview a guest and they're like, oh, give us your list of, we'll pre-approve the questions. Like, it's
yeah.
not right. like,
yeah.
you can't like, oh, it's not like a reporter's going to ask something out of the blue and they're, oh, shocked. I didn't know you were going to ask that. Like in Japan, they would be like, we're ending the interview.
Yeah, or it's like they come to the convention and it's like, we're only talking about this specific thing.
Mm-hmm. So, like, it's right, really yeah. just a cultural clash. Like, at the, you know, and like a lot of like both culture and legal in that sense, right? Like, Toei doesn't want just anybody, like, oh, like you can, you know, they want only good press. They only want the people that they want to, you know, it's mm-hmm. very official, very, it's just not how it works here.
It's interesting because if you go back like 10, 15 years, Funimation had a fan site section on their website where they were like, here's how you make a Dragon Ball Z fan site. And here's some banners that you can use.
Right. Yeah.
The most extreme example, we've only got a couple minutes. There is a YouTuber named Gilva Sunner, and they got 1,300 copyright blocks from Nintendo. And it looks like another 2,200 blocks the following day. Probably more have happened. But I looked into this, and this person, they just posted the Nintendo soundtracks wholesale on their YouTube channel and got away with it for a very long time. And
but the problem here is that there's no way to buy those in America. Like, a lot of them are, like, yep. titles that Nintendo, like, really old titles that Nintendo has never put out and is, like, you know, if they didn't have an interest, like, say, 10, 15 years ago, like, they sure as hell are not interested in doing it today. So this is like a, almost like a, this is a preservation problem as much as anything.
I mean, maybe YouTube isn't the right place to do it. And also, do we know that this person wasn't putting ads on all of that? Like, you know, it's one
thing. No, this person actually was not, I know in this case, this person was not doing paid advertisements. Okay. This was just putting them up. And, you know, like, obviously, but, like, you know, the only other, so, like, it's just funny to go after that, right? Nintendo is in particular has been really bad. I mean, like, in fact, this is a weird side-related story, but after Nintendo did this, they were getting a lot of bad press, and then just this, like, I think 2 or 3 days ago, they released, like, a new...
Oh, the Pokemon soundtrack?
Yeah, the Pokemon right, soundtracks, yes. and they have, like, this really long legalese of, like, you can use it for these purposes. If it's non-commercial, you're basically fine. But, and they give, like, tons of examples, and you have to go through, like, 3 or 4 pages of, EULAs, and eventually you are able to download it. And for the record, they're lossless files. They're WAV files. So that's really nice of them, but, like, I view that as, like, a positive PR turn of, like, oh shit, we're getting so much crap about our music. Here, take some Diamond and Pearl soundtracks, like, fucking nerds.
I guess I've never found it difficult to find video game soundtracks if I really want them. I used to, God, what was it? You would be able to download this weird file and then you had to input it into a machine that would, like, output WAV files. And that's how I had all the Nintendo soundtracks on my iPod.
Yeah. And I will say about this for this guy, like, this guy is not fighting it. He's kind of just like, all right, you know, like, he understands that, like, but it's more just like, why would they do this? You know, like, oh, he's been doing this for so long. And like, this is literally a case of, like, he's not hurting anybody. You know, like, no one was to import these from Japan, and or, you know, or anyone who would still do it. Instead, it's people who are like, I like this music.
Yeah, somebody just wants to hear the Wario Land soundtrack.
You know, it's just like a weird thing to do. It's basically just like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know if there was like a net bee of a bee nest, right? And just like stirring it up for kind of shits and giggles.
Just major Nintendo dick swinging.
I got to wonder though, with how many things were flagged, it must have just been an automated thing. They probably just clicked a button one day.
Yeah.
You know, it's entirely possible somebody was sitting there and flagging every individual song, but you know, maybe they just finally uploaded their library to the flagging software or however that works.
Yeah, it's like I said, that's why I think it should be at least a team of people curating like YouTube content instead of just like an algorithm that picks up on certain video clips and stuff.
Yeah. Well,
these can be the modern Death Squad.
Even if a person was reviewing that one though, like uploading the soundtracks is it's a pretty cut and dry violation of their terms of service. Now the video essays are another thing.
Right.
But if I just like put up the Mission Impossible song, like I don't have an argument there for why it was okay to do that.
Yeah. And that's why the channel's gone. You know, the guy's just like, all right, like it sucks, but I was just doing my best. So it's just a regrettable situation. But that's like not even a case of like, maybe he was. It's just blows. Yeah.
Anyway, this has been the Gonzo.moe No Name Anime Show. You can find it at Gonzo.moe. You can find it at WJMOE Radio. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called nowadays. Google Podcasts, I think. Google Music Store. I don't know.
No, if your podcatcher, Stitcher, podcatcher, I don't know. There's lots of them.
If you're listening to the show, then you probably already figured it out on your own. Something that I think that we need to do. Did you know that Stu Levy made a feature film called Van Von Hunter? It's a train wreck.
Now I do.
And I think that we need to watch it. And we need to talk about it.
This is our next anime commentary that we're going to record.
We could do a commentary, but I think we also need to do a podcast where we talk about the movie. So look forward to that happening at some point. Thank you everybody for checking us out. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Noel.
Thanks.
Thank you, Anime Feet from Dress Up Darling, episode 2.
Why?
Thank you, Anime Feet from Akebi School Uniform.
Shoot. My DMs.